Hello and welcome to Stoner. Great show for you this week. I talked to novelist and poet Tao Lin. His most recent novel is Taipei. But I thought to have him on the show because I somehow ended up on his Wikipedia page, and it said that he had been exploring psychedelics and was writing a nonfiction book about Terrence McKenna. So he walked in and we started talking about that, and then we were just sort of launched into it. Tao Lin is the correct pronunciation of your name?
Yes.
Excellent. I used to listen to like Tribe Called Quest, and they'd always say Tao, you know, really? Studying the Tao.
Really?
That was like a kind of 90s rap pronunciation. You never heard that before?
No.
Okay. Well, welcome, Tao Lin.
Thank you. Did he already start?
Yeah, now we're started. Yeah, okay. It started. We're in it.
Some of my classmates used to also call me Tao.
Tao?
Yeah, but not from the Tribe Called Quest. Not a Tribe Called Quest reference.
That was not the reference.
Just from them trying to pronounce it. Because they hadn't heard of Taoism, the religion. In Florida, where I grew up.
In Florida, okay. What was it like growing up in Florida?
I lived in three different suburbs of increasing size. And the first one was probably small to medium size. So I got a good experience of suburbs from lower middle class to higher middle class. And it was just... It felt the same throughout that gradient of class, and I liked it a lot because I like driving around listening to music.
I also like that, and it's probably the thing I miss the most about I grew up in California. Sometimes you don't realize like what things are pleasures to you until they're taken away from you, like driving around the Bay Area, like merging onto freeways with music on. It's like a great feeling. What were you like when you were a teenager in Florida? Were you smoking weed?
No. I only smoked weed once until sometime in college. The first time I smoked weed and the only time before college was in high school. I barely had any friends. When a few of my friends and all their friends and a bunch of other people gathered in my side yard and someone passed a bong to me and I smoked a hit of weed and then drove to an MXPX concert.
How was the concert?
It was good. I had a lot of fun at it. That was the first time I ever ran through a pit.
A mosh pit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't attribute it to the weed at all at the time.
And you weren't inspired to give it another shot after that, I would think, then?
I wasn't inspired just because I just had no idea what it did to me.
Yeah. There must have been a lot of weed circulating and lower middle class Florida suburbs, I would think.
Probably.
Seems like a good place to buy some weed.
Yeah. I never encountered it because in middle school I played an online role-playing game a lot and I was indoors.
What game?
Gemstone 3.
I don't know anything about that game.
It's a text-based online role-playing game. I learned of it because in 1995 AOL... On their front page, it began offering it for a certain amount of money per month.
I used to run up really big AOL bills on my parents' phone line, you know, when you had to pay by the hour with dial-up, and they took it away from me. And it was like the first feeling of withdrawal I've ever felt in my life. Like I felt physically deflated because I couldn't go on AOL chat rooms anymore.
Yeah, my parents took away my ability to play Gemstone 3 more than once. They hid one of the cords I needed to get to the internet because I was playing Gemstone 3 so much.
Where are your parents from?
They're from Taiwan.
Were you an artist when you were a young person? Were you interested in that?
I was interested in music.
What kind of music?
I played classical piano and also drums in the marching band. Snare drum.
Was there a kind of music you wanted to be making then, or it was a performance-based practice?
Performance, because I had piano lessons. And then the marching band would play at football games and would go to performances. And the drum line would also do our own competitions and stuff.
When did you first make your own art?
I think when I was like 3 or 4, I made tiny booklets and I sold them to my mom for like a quarter or 5 cents. They would be like 5 to 10 pages, and most of the pages would be drawings. And it would have a little bit of text. It would be like the dinosaur that was too big or something. And I'll draw a dinosaur, something indicating it got too big, and then like the end.
When did you first start writing things that you showed other people?
In college. I think it was at NYU in a creative writing class.
What inspired a marching band student from an immigrant family in Florida to first go to NYU and then start writing fiction at NYU?
I've never thought about the first question that much, why I went to NYU. I think I viewed NYU as the most extreme other than from where I was from, in Florida, in the suburbs. And I was really unhappy, so it seemed like a good choice. I didn't really think about it. It just seemed like good to leave Florida.
I think I became aware of your writing in, I don't know, when did your first two books came out at the same time, right? What was that, 2005?
My first two prose books in 2007.
2007, yeah. Okay. Where were you when you put out two books at, how old were you, 25 years old, 27 years old?
23,
years old.
Yeah. The books were published by a small independent publisher, Melville House.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, they didn't make you rich.
The books didn't get that many reviews, and I didn't get rich off them. I only got 1,000 and either 500 or 1,000 advances on those two books.
But it was still like enough to have like people like being like, what does this guy think he is coming out with these books?
Oh, yeah.
Did you perceive that?
Yeah. Also, partly that reaction came from my blog.
Yes.
I had a blog called Reader of Depressing Books.
I think it was also a time when people were more suspicious of the internet. Who is this guy? Two books? And he came from the internet? And his books are about people who are on the internet and talk about the internet, you know? There was more of a feeling in 2007 that we shouldn't break the fourth wall of the internet, that we should like act like it doesn't exist, like we should all be in like a giant artistic production that denies the existence of the internet in real life. Mm-hmm. What was your relationship with the internet like?
My relationship with the internet was very natural because I had started using the internet when I was playing Gemstone 3.
Yeah.
I was playing it heavily, like 6 to 10 hours a day.
Your writing always struck me as the kind of writing that can be produced by the everyday practice of writing. And I know that you've written about your daily practices and keeping a document open that you keep writing in. I'm wondering when those habits started to form in you. When did you kind of figure out your system for making art?
I figured out this is a new system for me, taking notes. I started doing it only after my previous book, Taipei, previous novel, Taipei.
Which I really enjoyed.
Thank you.
That was what, 2 or 3 years ago that came out?
Four years ago.
Yeah. Time flies.
After that, I was trying to recover from drugs. I was using a lot of pharmaceutical drugs.
When did those come into your life?
In 2009. I read about Adderall online for months, and it seemed like something I wanted to try. So I tried it. A friend mailed me some.
Yeah.
I tried it, then I got more. And I used that a lot for around 4 years.
And you wrote, that ended up being part of how you wrote those books?
Taipei, only Taipei, yeah.
How do you feel like you write on Adderall?
I don't think I write any better or even different. I just spend more minutes working. I viewed it mostly as a means to increase my motivation levels and mood. Mm. On Adderall, it'll be fun a lot of the time to be writing, fun and interesting to be editing and writing.
I'm interested in that idea of things that are fun and interesting, not as a product, but as like a visceral human experience. Had you also tried marijuana again by this point?
I started smoking marijuana every day a month before I started taking notes every day.
Okay, so you had an Adderall period, and then you came out of that Adderall period. What made you want to explore marijuana again? What is it, 15 years after your MXPX experience?
I think it was this person, Terrence McKenna, that I encountered on YouTube in 2012. He was a big factor in me getting so into marijuana.
What did he say about marijuana that made you interested?
He promotes all psychedelics heavily, psilocybin mushrooms, DMT, salvia, but he calls cannabis the central practice of his life, and he just praised it a lot.
Is it the central practice of his life because it's something that you can do daily? I mean, no one wants someone else to do a DMT daily, I don't think.
Yeah, I think it is because he does it daily. He did it daily.
Yeah.
He started smoking when he was 18 and he died at 56, and he only stopped for a period of months one time. And he would smoke throughout the day and night.
When you started smoking marijuana, did you dip your toe into it, or did you go into a full McKenna practice immediately?
Full McKenna practice almost immediately.
That's a bold move.
Is that something McKenna would say?
Oh, no. No, it's something I would say. I'm just, I feel like most people dabble in marijuana and sort of slowly build up a tolerance, you know, across doing it a few times when they're a teenager, and, you know, their chart is like a nice, like, slowly up graph.
Oh, yeah. That seems like the wiser way.
Was it hard on you to go from nothing to smoking marijuana every day?
It wasn't hard. That's why I felt confused when he said bold, because I didn't view my behavior as bold. I viewed it as weak, if anything, because I wasn't able to control myself. I just went right into it. And then only over years have I been able to control it and figure out how much to smoke at what times to optimize my use of it. It's taken 3 years, I would say, to get where I'm beginning to formulate plans.
What was it like in that very first period where it was totally new to you?
It felt astonishing. I felt awe and wonder every day. And these were things that I never felt before cannabis or other psychedelics. But on cannabis, I felt awe and wonder without the dread and terror of, say, mushrooms or DMT. So this was a completely new feeling for me. And it also put me into a new state of consciousness that I had never occupied before, and that I found really interesting.
You're a person who's spent a lot of time in your own head. Your work uses stream of consciousness, transcripts of G-chats. For someone who had already thought a lot about what's going inside your head, what was it like to introduce a new factor in your brain?
It felt good. One reason is because now I don't think of myself in the past as being in my head that much. I think of myself as most of the time just not thinking anything or worrying about things.
Was that something that you, prior to using marijuana, felt like you struggled with, the feeling of being in your own head?
I still struggle with that. But if I use marijuana wisely, I can get out of that. I feel like before I started smoking every day, I existed in the thing that I rarely exist in now. This place where I'm worrying all the time and unable to do anything new. Like around my parents, unable to use a different tone of voice than I've used growing up. One that sounds like that I'm angry at them. But stoned around them, I can immediately break that habit.
What's it like being stoned around your parents?
I like it a lot.
Yeah. Do they know you're stoned?
They've suspected.
Yeah.
And then I've told them later on.
What do your parents think about marijuana?
They like it a lot.
Oh, really?
Because they're comparing it to when I was on pharmaceutical drugs. During that time, my mom was worried for years. But now she sees on cannabis I'm productive and I talk to her and I laugh more.
What has it been like for your artistic practice? I mean, you're taking these pretty big swings from doing you know, lots of pharmaceutical drugs to going straight into marijuana every day. And particularly with your art, which seems like it's generated every day using a specific practice. What has this stint been like?
It's been really different than anything I've experienced before. I view cannabis separately from my other experiences with mushrooms and DMT. But my experiences with psilocybin mushrooms have been life-changing. In 2013, I took mushrooms in my room and then I cut the cords to my computer and threw my computer away and posted a message on my website saying that I wasn't going to talk to anyone anymore, except a few friends and family. It was in all caps and had a lot of typos. It was 4 paragraphs. And then since then, I've felt motivated to do what I view as the main message of that trip, which is, quote, leave society. And by that, I mean pharmaceutical drugs and a lot of other things with society, like mercury fillings, pesticides, and a lot of other issues.
You've left your fillings behind?
I never got fillings, but my parents did.
Have you urged them to abandon them?
Yeah, they went to a dentist and got them removed, but I had to convince them over days.
I agree with you about them being separate experiences. I read that you very closely write down your cannabis and caffeine intake, and the closest corollary I can like describe to it is the way that like some like tech guys now, you know, like really closely track like every single thing they eat and like every calorie they burn and stuff. So you're doing that for weed. What has that been like and what have you learned?
Yeah, I've been doing that for weed for maybe 1 or 2 years. I've learned that the more careful I am with cannabis, the more I enjoy it. Mm. I had to develop a way to control better, and taking the notes helped me control better. Because without the notes, I would never be able to remember how much I was smoking the week before or even a few days ago. So I would never be able to gradually reduce my usage or do anything other long-term about my usage. But with the notes, I can plan ahead for days and weeks. Hmm. Right now, I'm in a way where I smoke around 5 to 6 hours after waking. That's the first time I smoke, which is a lot more control than I've ever had before with cannabis, and I'm enjoying it a lot.
Hmm. Yeah, I've struggled with that sense of self-control myself. Hmm. I think I struggle with self-control with everything that I like, so it's not a surprise there. In some ways, I view smoking cannabis as a better option to be out of, like, a little bit out of control with than other things. I've never really been addicted to other substances, but you know, I have trouble even controlling myself with iced coffee. Like, given the option, if there was no repercussions, I would just chain drink iced coffee all the time. It's, like, highly pleasurable.
Yeah, my notes have helped me control my caffeine usage also at the same time as cannabis.
How do those two things interact for you? Do you try to keep them separate from each other or double dose?
Right now, I try to keep them separate. The method I found best is to do caffeine right when I wake up and then work on something and then later in the day get stoned.
Did you also write down what your cannabis experiences were like, and have you been able to derive any insight from trying to record either during or like in the same way that people keep dream journals immediately after, like what a specific experience was like?
Yeah, I have in my notes also written about a lot of my cannabis experiences. Since I was stoned almost all the time I was awake, it had to have.
Yeah.
But I also took a lot of notes directly about cannabis. I cried a lot the first year or two, alone in my room, just thinking about remembering things.
What would provoke the crying, or where would your brain go when it was allowed to roam in that way?
I would just remember seemingly non-sequitur memories from childhood or even from adulthood. And I'd also be really stoned on Eden cannabis, so I'd be feeling emotional already. One thing I remember crying about is that I imagined myself as a child telling my mom that I felt lonely. But I had never done that. I was just imagining that I would never do that because I feel like as a child, that would make her feel really bad. That's one thing I cried about.
Has the experience of cutting down and being more proactive and conscious about your use, how has that changed how it feels for you?
I'm still smoking a lot and ingesting a lot, but I'm keeping it steady, whether I move it up or down. I've had to do that, I feel, because in the past 2 years, I've been working on my next book. I had to develop a way to use cannabis where I had almost the same state of consciousness all day.
Does that mean doing like a little bit every so often?
Yeah, a little bit just to keep doing it throughout the day.
One of the more fascinating things that I've heard from people who are in legalization states where there's way, way more products available is that that sort of a usage pattern is what a lot of people recommend who are really experienced. And they're, particularly with edibles, really able to like design a product that's more based on that kind of a use pattern, like a very, very low dose edible that you ate throughout the day. It's a pretty different idea than like this extremely concentrated, like super, super, super weed. Where were you getting, like what weed were you smoking during all this period when you went from 0 to 60?
From various drug dealers whose numbers I would get from friends and acquaintances.
Do you get into any kind of connoisseur stuff or strain stuff? Does that matter to you at all?
I never got into that. The marijuana itself was so powerful and good.
Yeah.
My mind never thought like I need to get into other strains, at least not yet.
How is the project of leaving society behind going?
It's going really good.
Do you keep to those restrictions? Do you not talk to anyone except a few friends and your family?
No.
How long did that
last? I talk to more friends now, a lot of friends now.
Yeah.
The parts of society I'm trying to leave are mostly I've changed my diet, drug use. I want to move somewhere with cleaner air.
You got any prospects?
Near the beach in California, somewhere northern or southern.
When you think about what you want to be writing now, so much of your writing that I've read is about your own past and things that you've mined and almost just like a stream of consciousness of someone. I don't know that it's like specifically you, but it's someone who shares knowledge with you or something like that. You're in a totally different stage in your life now. Do you think about like what it's going to be like to write about this period of your life?
Yeah, I do, because I'm already writing about it. Since I started taking notes in 2013, I've felt that I'm always writing about what's happening to my life while it's happening.
To me, when you started smoking weed, did you even know anyone else? Like, would you have any guides on this process, or was it a totally solitary pursuit?
I did have some guides because I had a lot of friends who liked drugs, and they were all into weed already.
What was it like having a bunch of friends who smoked a lot of weed when you didn't smoke any weed?
They weren't that into weed, though. It seemed like they only smoked sometimes, so I was never... When I was around them, I did smoke. I forgot to say, between high school... No, that was after college. So, yeah, that's correct.
Were people concerned when you went from not smoking any weed to smoking uncontrollably all the time?
I think people were more amused than concerned. They were concerned about me before.
Yeah.
I would often talk openly about dying. Half joking, but still before. Now I feel optimistic.
So in a day, you wake up, some caffeine, weed-free period. I assume that's where the writing happens.
Yeah, that's where I've been writing.
Then at a certain point, you shift gears. Weed part of the day kicks in.
The weed part kicks in, and lately I've been really good.
Yeah.
I've been going into parks and reading for like 2 hours. And then I'll come home and get to a more stone level and eat. And then when I get even more stone, I do exercise.
What kind of exercise?
I've done Kundalini yoga from videos, sitting on my room, breathing. And also I have a pull-up bar and I do like gymnastic type things.
What is working out stone like? I haven't really done it much. Is it hard?
I like it a lot.
Yeah.
While I do it, I think of a lot of things. I can think really clearly for some reason.
Is there anything else about your use of marijuana that you think is interesting that I haven't asked about? You have a really unusual relationship with it, so I don't even most people are, oh, get some notes.
Yeah, I took notes.
Tao arrived with like what I would describe as like a hand-bound manuscript, a book that looks like it would cost 1 cent on Amazon or cost like $200 on Amazon, one of the two, and a bunch of handwritten notes. What are your notes there?
One thing I've learned writing my book is that people are less stoned now than ever before.
More people are stoned though, right?
You're saying more people,
I think more people are stoned, but you think people are less stoned.
Yeah,
I kind of agree with you.
I think I'm saying something.
Okay, we're talking about two different things. Tell me
People now are less stoned than ever before, just in normal consciousness.
Okay, yes.
From their own endocannabinoids.
If I read you correctly, the ecstatic experience that lives within us all, that maybe weed is a permutation of, that's at like an all-time low. Like our reserves are low. People are giving off less stone.
That, and also people are physically, because their cannabis receptors aren't functioning at a level that they functioned for most of human evolution. Now people just feel less stoned than people did in the past. For a number of reasons that I noticed.
Oh, yeah, please, by all means.
One of them is because this pesticide called glyphosate, have you heard of it?
Yeah, and it's actually the thing that I most consistently hear from people who are really knowledgeable about marijuana and how it's produced is you have no idea how much pesticide is on every kind of weed that you can buy. But I don't know about that chemical. What chemical are you talking about?
Yeah, this chemical is a pesticide. It's called glyphosate. Monsanto began selling it in 1974 in a weed killer called Roundup.
Yeah.
And it's also used in agriculture. And glyphosate, I learned, it disables an enzyme in you that the body uses to turn compounds with very complicated names that are endocannabinoids into even more potent endocannabinoids. So in the past, everyone had these more potent endocannabinoids in them. But now since glyphosate is in everyone, we all have impaired systems for that. So people are just less stoned, even if they never smoke weed.
Our natural chemistry is less like the stoned state than ever before. It potentially even go, I don't know anything about this. This is all science from a person who doesn't understand science, but that if that's true, people who do smoke marijuana would need to smoke more of it or smoke it in higher concentrations to get the same effect if their receptors are truly diminished by pesticides.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And to me, this is all pretty, we're getting into conspiracy theory here. So we're slapping a huge asterisk on this, but
I really like conspiracy theory.
I'm not surprised to hear that. If I were to interpolate a little bit further, when you go to these legalization states like California or particularly like Oregon or Washington, Colorado, people are smoking really strong weed. It's a little scary how strong some of the weed is. And it makes me think back to my girlfriend in high school's father was like a big hippie. He told me, he was like, man, I was at Altamont and I lost a case that had 20 joints in it. And I was like, you were going to smoke 20 joints in one day? And he was like, yeah. And, you know, that's how strong the weed was. Like there was a period of time where weed was maybe 10% as strong as it is now. What if people's receptors were differently receptive at that point?
They were, because glyphosate only came out in 1974 and the use of it has increased exponentially. Like for the first 10 years, it wasn't that much. And then since the 1995 or so, when they introduced genetically modified crops that went up a lot in 1995.
Do you sometimes, like, when you smell weed in public in New York, the first thing my mind does is go, wow, everybody's smoking weed outside now. The revolution's here.
Yeah. I've often smoked weed outside from a one-hitter.
Do you worry about, like, the police or anything smoking marijuana in New York?
Yeah, I look around before I smoke and I make sure there's no police.
Yeah.
In my room, I felt paranoid a lot of the time.
What does paranoia feel like to you?
Just being afraid that I'm going to get in legal trouble from people smelling the smoke or from police or other agencies keeping tabs on me or something.
Do you worry that people in your building, like, know you as the weed guy?
I've had those kinds of worries also, but not anymore, not in the past year or two. This is when I was beginning my cannabis usage and using it out of control when I was paranoid like that.
How much were you using when you were out of control?
Just in an uncontrolled manner. I also wasn't weighing it back then. That was part of the uncontrolledness.
This part of the show is called Peak Experiences. I ask all the guests the same questions. The first question is, what is your favorite way to enjoy marijuana? Totally ideal setting. Joint, edible.
I think I like them both equally. They're both my favorite. Edible or smoked.
Do you roll your own joints?
Right now I use a water bong, which I recommend. Filtering the smoke through water helps a lot for my lungs. I cough a lot less, and I get less of a stuffed up nose.
How did you choose the bong?
I went to stay with my friend Mira, and she had this bong. And before the bong, I was just smoking from a tiny pipe / bong thing.
Yeah.
And this got me way more stoned. And also, it's better for my lungs. And then when I went home, I bought one for myself.
What's a special place to you? A place you've visited, somewhere you've gone back to, place you think about anywhere on the earth?
I think just my room.
Tell me about your room.
My room, I moved there in 2011. I don't view it as special. That's just the main place that came to mind when you asked that, because I've been in it so much.
Yeah.
And in my book that I wrote, I also write about it. And I've also drawn a diagram of it that's in my book. So it's in my head a lot, this place, my room.
Do you live there alone?
Yeah. It's a studio apartment.
Is it hard for you to make sure you leave your room?
That was more of a problem when I was using pharmaceutical drugs. But now I like to go out multiple times a day to get sunlight. The first half of the day, I've been going outside not stoned and working for a few hours, then reading in the park, then coming home and getting stoned.
Are you writing fiction right now primarily?
Yeah, I've started organizing my notes for my next book, which is a novel, and it's called Leave Society.
Is it about your experiences leaving society?
Yeah.
Can you recommend a stoned viewing experience, TV or movie, something that you really stuck with you?
Yeah. Something on YouTube, actually. Google Judy Wood and then watch her talk with over 500,000 views, around 500,000 views.
Judy Wood.
Yeah, it's about 9/11.
Okay. Does it suggest that 9/11 was a government conspiracy?
Actually, Judy Wood has a different perspective than I've ever encountered on 9/11. The first sentence of her book is something like, I paraphrase, "For the record, I do not believe that the government had something to do with it, nor do I not believe that the government had something to do with it." So she leaves belief out of it.
Yeah.
And she has 3 degrees in engineering in all the right places to be able to know what happened to the tower. So in her talk, she just explains that from all her research, it seems that the towers turn into dust in a process using a technology that isn't in the public domain. And cannabis is good for this because this is something you probably haven't ever heard before. And cannabis can get you into a different state of mind. So you're not thinking of everything you already know about 9/11. Unless you've already been smoking this entire time.
Yeah, or you've been watching 9/11 videos on YouTube the entire time.
That also, yeah.
I have not. You said that you originally encountered Terence McKenna through a lecture you saw on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
What for people who are curious about Terence McKenna's work and are looking for an entry point, is there anything you can recommend?
Yeah, one of the first things I watched was a 10-hour plus workshop by him, which is like three talks over 3 days called The Original Tree of Knowledge.
I have trouble concentrating. Like when you say like a 10-hour YouTube, it's like, that's kind of grueling. Do you like challenges like that, like watching a 10-hour lecture?
That's the only 10-hour lecture I've watched.
Okay.
Actually, most of my listening on YouTube is Terence McKenna.
Actually, normally I don't ask people this, but it sounds like your daily practice involves reading in the park. So do you have a stoned reading experience that you can recommend?
I do. This book called When God Was a Woman by Merlin Stone. It's about Merlin Stone's this sculptress.
For a minute, I thought you were making that whole thing up to fuck with me, and I was going to be like, that's a brilliant, like, construction of a name if you just, like, were making that up to troll me.
No.
Merlin Stone.
Yeah, okay. It's real. It's totally not her real name.
Okay.
It's this sculptress who looked into anthropology and learned that for tens of thousands of years, humans only made female sculptures. Only around 12,000 years ago did people start making both male and female sculptures. And then from that evidence and other evidence, she, in her book, conveys how humankind started off egalitarian and worshiping a female deity, and that it only devolved to male deities and sexism and other problems like that.
Do you have a favorite snack? I've heard about your caffeine and marijuana intake. What else is important?
Lately, my favorite snack's been watermelon.
How do you like to prepare watermelon?
I sometimes the watermelons I've been eating have been small. I've just been.
It's hard to do watermelon for one, particularly like in a studio apartment, unless you're gonna go totally crazy and just eat a whole watermelon.
I've been eating 3 of these small watermelons usually.
Every day?
Yeah, not every day.
Oh, okay.
Like 3 days a week.
Do you have to control your watermelon intake to not like get too deep into it, or do you have a natural filter for it?
I have to control.
Yeah.
The level of control I have to apply is when I buy it each day, because I'll eat all of them no matter how many I buy. And I'll eat too much and I'll have to pee that night like 2 or 3 times.
If you're going to a desert island, you could bring one piece of music with you to play for the rest of your life. What's something that you'd bring, one album?
When you said that, I thought a song.
Okay.
And I thought Chopin's Third Sonata, a 28 or so minute piano piece. When you said that, I thought song, then I was like, I should get a really long song.
Yeah, I think that's a solid choice. What does that piece mean to you?
I just enjoy it a lot. It doesn't mean that much to me.
Did you play it when you were a kid?
No.
No.
I started listening to more classical music, and I view this partly as leaving society, because classical music has no lyrics. So when I'm listening to it, I don't get these ideas about love and stuff that used to pervade me.
What's one thing that you're looking forward to going forward, looking at the rest of your life? You said that you were thinking you'd like to leave New York and go live in California, but in an overall sense, like, what's something that you anticipate and think is going to be cool?
I was anticipating this being cool, and I look forward to it.
Yeah.
I took notes and thought about it. And then now I'm looking forward to just tonight, I guess, when I can get more stone and do stuff.
As someone who was, you said the internet was really fluid for you, and now you want to leave society. Is the internet a cautionary tale in your own life? And I don't know, what do you think about, do you caution young writers about the internet?
I haven't cautioned anyone about the internet. But actually, I don't view view that as, if I ever leave the internet, that will be like a decade or two from now.
Thinking longer term, it's easy to define leaving society. It's almost easier to talk about walking away from something than where you're going. Beyond like a geographical move, where do you think you're going with this leaving society? Is there a destination?
Right now, I haven't thought that much about a destination. I haven't thought, like, what is this going to lead to in 10 or 20 years? I've only thought about 1 to 3 years. And so far, I feel a lot healthier. I sleep better, and I've gotten closer with my parents. And I feel more organized in my writing and more productive.
What has been getting closer to your parents been like? Like, what have you learned about them and that relationship?
Sorry.
It's a tough question.
Yeah.
Like, one of the reasons that I like doing this show is that when you ask someone when was the first time you smoked marijuana, you ask them questions like, where are you from? And what are your parents like? And what would they think? And what were you like as a teenager? And those are really like deep questions, even though like I don't necessarily think that marijuana itself is that deep a topic. You know, to hear someone say it's like changed my relationship with my parents, that is pretty profound. Not that many people when they're in their 30s have a shift in their relationship to their parents.
It's made me enjoy and look forward to being around them for hours at a time. But you asked what I had learned from this, and I couldn't think of what I had learned. I think because I'm just now beginning to write about it. I've deliberately not thought about that, I think. I've mostly learned about myself, because I never used to talk to my parents in small talk. I never used to have small talk with my parents, but now I can do it every day on a plan with just ingested weed.
Do you find them more entertaining, or are you more engaged with like their lives and stories as a result?
I do. I feel more engaged, and I feel more emotional also. And another reason is because my parents fight/bicker a lot, and I also do that a lot with them.
Does your experience of being more open to listening to your parents and maybe being more entertained by their stories, has it caused any sense of empathy in you?
Yeah, they were the only two out of, combined, they have 9 siblings, and only they came to America. It seems really extreme to me, but I've never gotten a long answer from them about why. My mom says that she didn't want to. My dad came to get master's and doctorate degrees in physics. Probably that's the main reason. That's why I haven't gotten a long answer. It was just because my dad came for school, and then my mom came, and they stayed.
Are you interested in physics?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I asked my dad something about the lens of the eye for my book. I put it in the bibliography that I asked him. He writes papers, and I told him about all the papers I've cited and how important papers are.
What did he think?
I think he likes it.
I'd love to have you on again sometime and talk further as your journey gets deeper and deeper.
That'll be good. Thank you.
Thank you. And that was Stoner. Thanks very much to our editor, Ann Garrett. Thank you to Justine Dom for being our associate producer. All of the visual branding is by Mickey Duje. This show comes out every single Tuesday.